Thank you so much, Graham. I'm absolutely delighted to be part of your session today with the topic of what does retirement mean? And what I want to do is I want to, as we have all day, I'm going to take you through a lot of data, but think of it as a story. What I want to do is I'm going to start with the U.S., and I'm going to take you through some of the key themes. I have the pleasure of running research for our firm, and for many years, every year I do a study about retirement. And it was a couple of years ago that we decided to interview recent retirees. We wanted to know how their life was going, were they happy. They were quite happy, but many of them weren't actually retired. About a quarter told us they had gone back to work. And so I put a bookmark in that idea, and I went back last year, and I said, well, why would people go back to work? So we did a study that we called the working retired, which I know sounds like jumbo shrimp, but the idea is, what is it that would make people go back to work? And we understood for a lot of people, it was, at that point, it was almost 30% of Americans got to retirement. They actually left their first career, took about 18 months off, and went back to work. And lest you feel sorry for them, they were very happy about it. They chose to go back to work. They found it fulfilling both mentally and physically. It was very, very important to them. And so what I want to show you is how this is growing and what we think some of the implications are. Knowing that you all are financial advisors, the question is, how do you take what has always been the key reason why people invest, which was always to plan for their financial future? We call it retirement. But what if retirement no longer means not working? How do we re-express the goal that you're working with your clients about to meet their need, which is now some mix of work and not? So what I want to do is I'm going to take you through a study that we call the We Generation. It was actually a play on words with baby boomers, so we're often referred to as the Me Generation because they were selfish. And what I want to do is I want to take you through what American workers who are before retirement, what they're dealing with, and some of the issues. And as Graham said, when I finish with that, what I want to do is I want to take you through a study we just did last month using the Brilliant database, and I'll take you through that study in just a minute. But what I want to do is take you first through some of the trends in America. I guarantee that they're going to be deeper and maybe more drastic than you see here, but I think that some of the themes are very relevant. So with that, let me start with the U.S. study. The U.S. study looks at if people are going back to work, why would that be, and also how likely is this to grow in dominance? What we decided to look at was retirement confidence, but also we took three major themes. We looked at what could affect people's retirement. One of the big myths out there is that inheritance is going to be this huge wealth transfer in the trillions of dollars. It's going to lift everyone's sails and make it easier to retire. I'm going to show you data in a minute that will absolutely disprove that. They will make it look very modest, if at anything. Most clients can't invent rich parents. I don't know about you, but most of us don't have them, and therefore the retirement will be fairly modest. But specifically what we wanted to look at in addition to what might be coming in terms of inheritance is at the time that people are getting ready for retirement, so people who are over 45 and still working, rather, this year, we didn't interview retirees. This past year, we interviewed people who were still in the workforce, who were probably at that very time when they are adding a financial advisor to help them with these decisions. We wanted to know what else is going on in their house, literally in their house. We wanted to know if they had living parents, and if so, what were they doing for them? If they had grown children, what were they doing for them? And then, generally, how did that relationship with the advisor work? What were they looking for? What lessons have we learned? And then the Australian study looks at some of the similar behaviors, and I'll get to that in just a minute. Let me start with just the details. You don't need a methodology slide, but granted, we had over 5,000 people in our surveys. We generally do very large sample surveys, so we can cut the data in many ways. Know that there were at least 600 or 700 people in this year's study that had investable assets over $500,000. So this is not Joe American, Joe and Jane American. This is a lot of people, including many advised clients. And I'll actually show you in the U.S. how people with advisors in the U.S. are much better off than people without advisors in terms of their preparation and their knowledge. So with that, let me get started. I'm going to start with conclusions in terms of money and time. Retirement confidence in the U.S. is actually declining. In just 1 year, we found the percentage of Americans who went back to work went from 29% 2 years ago to 35%. More than one in three Americans gets to retirement, steps out, takes what really is a sabbatical. They don't really retire, and they go back to work. Two-thirds say they wanted to, and I'll get into a little bit of that in a minute. But generally, this is to go up 6 points in a year. We're already taking an office pool on what the number will be this year. We think it is going to be close to 40. And what I want to show you is how quickly this trend is growing and what is the implication for financial advisors if our clients stay in the workforce. This could be very good. This could be lots more accumulation. It have other implications. Retirement is getting pushed aside by what I would call the speed bumps of life, mortgage, gas prices, things that we all, healthcare is a big issue in the States. People who have advisors are much better prepared, but when we ask people how much money they want to live on in retirement, I'll show you the data, it's actually pretty, people have pretty lofty ideas about how much money they'd like to live on. And just a comment, I was at a conference in the Midwest about 6 months ago, and there was a man at my table who was wearing a T-shirt that said, "Instant gratification takes too long." There it is in a nutshell. I don't know whether you think that's uniquely American or if you think that might have aspects here too, but we don't like to wait for things. So we asked a question in our survey, and I'll show you the answer in a minute. We said, have you ever in your life not bought anything because you wanted to put that money towards something for your retirement? And I'll show you that in a minute. I mentioned inheritance already, and also the house, the myth of the house as a nest egg is certainly out there. And I'll show you data on housing in the U.S., not subprime, trust me, but we'll talk about other housing issues in the U.S. In terms of people issues, everyone expects to live to 85. That's the answer now. It doesn't matter if you're 42, 62, 72. We all have in mind that that's the number that we're pegging towards. That's the answer we hear. One in five people who have a living parent have taken them home. But here's the real sleeper. We defined a grown child as a child over the age of 25. We could debate that. However, when we ask this question of who had a child over 25 and what are you doing for them, one in three have either taken them home or are paying their rent. This is the issue in the States that no one had prepared for. We expected and were honored to take care of our parents. The kids are maybe another matter, but we're doing it, and it will have a major impact on retirement trends in the U.S. Helping the family is more about time than money, but frankly would fund what in the U.S. is called an individual retirement account. It'll look like nominal money, but this is a trend that I do think is heading around the globe. We'll take care of our parents forever. Anyone who has started to take care of your parents, there's no window where you say, oh, no, I'm done. They're with you, and that's fine, and you're honored. However, the kids, we said, how long do you think the kids might be on your payroll? Again, and we heard on average 8 years. So let's say they're 25 now, another 8 years. The kid's 33 before they're out on their own. So I think this trend is going to be muted in the Australia, as I'll show you the data in a minute. But we do think retirement's going to be crowded. That house is going to be crowded. One of the comments I heard about people who go back to work in the States, which are predominantly, by the way, college-educated men who go back, who have the education, who get a great job. They're not doing something beneath them. They're doing something very full of meaning. Yes, it's money. It helps fulfill a standard of living that they like. We also heard that part of the reason they went back is that they couldn't go home. You know, they were home. Maybe one gentleman said to me that he retired on Friday and his wife gave him till Wednesday of the following week and said to him that she had married him for better or worse, but not for lunch. Whatever the dynamic is, I think there's definitely an issue of how people will live out those later years. And what are the implications there? So let me get into confidence. When you ask people how confident they are and what they need, most people don't even know how much they need. Yellow is someone who has an advisor. Blue is someone without an advisor. And the general theme here is people with advisors are better prepared. They know what they need. They know how much they need. They may be more worried, but they're more worried about the right things. They're worried about very large issues. We ask people, how much money do you think you need to live on in retirement? And you can see people with low incomes think they need more than 100% of what they're earning now. So in other words, they're probably young, or they just assume that they'll have more income. I saw a piece in today's Sydney Morning Herald, the section on super, that asked the same question. And I think the average that I saw here is 65%, an estimation that you need 65% of your current earnings to live on in retirement. In the U.S., I would say that number is a little higher. It might be closer to 75 to 80%. You can see here, the more income people have, the more money. People who make over $150,000 in the U.S. think that they only need about two-thirds of that in retirement. But look to the right. Only half of workers think they're going to meet this target. When I talk to advisors, they say the same thing. Only half of U.S. advisors think their clients will make the goal that they have. So that's fairly daunting. Here's the issue on housing. One of the myths is that you're going to sell your home, your primary home, you're going to downsize and use that nest egg to cover your costs in living in retirement. That would work if you're actually planning on moving. But when we asked people, where do you expect to live in retirement, they actually want to live exactly where they are now. They don't want to leave their community. They don't want to leave their home. They've just put lots of improvements into their home. You can see some do downsize a little bit. The other reason why the house is not a nest egg is they forgot to pay for it. Okay? This is kind of a minor detail, but here's some data that is, I think, fairly shocking, and maybe it is not as strong here. But the way to read this is, look at the blue on the left. 81% of people in their late 40s still have a mortgage. Completely normal. Look all the way to the right. 51% of people over the age of 65 still have a mortgage. Okay? So here's another violation of a rule that I was taught growing up, which was you synchronized your mortgage to your career. And you didn't step out of your career until you were done with your mortgage. You can see that people are going to need to keep working. Yellow is home equity, what percentage of the home they own. You can see it only rises as far as 60%. But the real kicker on this slide is that bottom line running along, which says how many more years do you have left on your mortgage? Now, somehow in their 40s, they had 17 years left on their mortgage. 20 years passed, and people in their 60s have only worked off 5 years. So people who are over 65 still have, on average, 12 years left on their mortgage. That is very, very frightening. The other thing, just out of curiosity, is 1 in 5 Americans have an adjustable-rate mortgage. Okay? So there are lots of people who are going to have they're going to have rates reset on them, and they're going to have to come up with more money. And you can see the blue and the green there. About 60%, a little less than 60%, say that this is going to affect their household spending. So we've got lots of people who are going to be affected with today's economics, which will affect their ability. Remember, we have nothing compulsory. We don't have a super. We have an optional 401k program. People generally defer only 6 or 7%. So we start out with less money put aside for retirement. So that's a little bit on housing. Their biggest financial worry, now remember, if you have an advisor, we show this in yellow, just keeping up with monthly expenses for the average American without benefit of an advisor is their single biggest worry. People with advisors, that's not their issue. They're not worried about keeping up with monthly expenses. I love the fact that 1 in 5 of both camps have no worries. It sounds great. It's probably not real. But 1 in 5 say they have no worries at all when they think about financial worries. If you look in the box there in the yellow, you see that people with advisors, I would argue, are worried about the right things. Are they going to run out of money? Have they saved enough? They at least know to worry about the bigger issue of whether they are, in fact, adequately prepared. Healthcare in the U.S. is a whole different issue and is certainly a big issue for most people, whether you have an advisor or not. In terms of what will happen in the future, we ask people, what do you expect is going to go up a lot in the next year? And you can see the price of gas or home values are the top. Dead last is the stock market. People are not expecting the market to go up in the U.S. But you can see that the big worries are healthcare, home values, inflation, those types of things. So as a result, what will Americans think is going to happen to their retirement income? What will this do when they actually get ready to retire? They're going to have to reduce their standard of living. Whether they have an advisor or not, they readily admit that. People without an advisor tell us they think they're going to run out of money. Okay, obviously a big worry. The people with an advisor are worried about the big issue, health care. And just as an example, the estimates for the cost of health care for an American who is 65 today, they'll need $300,000 just for out-of-pocket costs of health care for the rest of their lives. It's a big number. And that's really the big issue for most Americans. So that's a little bit. So that's a little wrap-up. Here's the answer to the question I asked. Have you ever in your life not bought anything because you wanted to put that money towards retirement? 30% of Americans say, yes, I have. 70% say, no, I've never done that. I've always just bought whatever I've wanted. So the question is, what did those 30% who showed great fiscal restraint, what didn't they buy? Well, it would be the plasma TV. Okay, that is what senses to them, a good sense of, you know, maybe it was going away for the weekend. You can see Starbucks. I guess I shouldn't call it just a certain brand, but you can see on the bottom expensive specialty coffee drinks. There are things that people think are worth putting off, and the list continues, family vacations, giving money away. The things that are dead last, though, the things that people will not forego are things about their family. If you look at the bottom two that ranked last on our list, it was helping your kids. with education, with private or public tuition, getting them ready for grad school. So you start to get the theme here of what's going on with Americans. They will do right now for their families first, and they will not curb their spending today. So there's a little bit of a flavor there. Let's talk about inheritance, because I think this has been out there as a general comment that inheritance is a huge number and baby boomers will have trillions passing hands. What I want to show you is where the data is. Have you ever, we wanted to know, have people ever had any kind of lump sum? Inheritance obviously was our goal here. I listed every lump sum I could think of. So that's going to include taking money from a retirement plan, stock options, being America, winning money in a legal settlement seems to be a something that Americans, you can see 8%, that's insane. And I even threw in win the lottery because I wasn't sure. And you can see this is what people tell us, that 17% have already received an inheritance. You can see selling a business, selling real estate. And then we wanted to know, well, how much did that bring in? So here's the answer on that. How much was that lump sum worth? The most remunerative thing you could do in the United States was to sell a business. About $600,000, but remember, that was only 4% of Americans have a business to sell. Then you can look at real estate. Third down is the point I want to make. Although you can see that the mean was $187,000, that was just a handful of outliers. The median amount of money that an American will inherit is $37,700. That's it. I haven't seen the data here, but generally speaking, that might retire some debt, it might pay for a car. There's only 1% of Americans who will inherit more than $1 million, and another 5% who will inherit more than $250,000. Inheritance, the windfall is more wind than it is anything else. Okay, you can also see winning the lottery must include I think you call them scratchies here, because it certainly isn't the entire large amounts of money. Then we said, well, maybe we've missed it. Maybe these people are too young. Is it possible that they don't have an inheritance yet, but they think they're going to get one? So we said, what kind of lump sum do you think you might inherit? And receive an inheritance actually did flow to the top, and you can see that's another 24%. But if you do the math, you can see that 24% think they might, 17% already have. Some of you have already found the joke in the slide, which I didn't actually try to do to be funny, but she's found it, I can see. 12% of Americans expect to win the lottery. Classic. Okay? It just happened to show up there. That's probably the same group of people who aren't worried about anything. You know, winning the lottery is not a financial plan, last time I looked. But that kind of hope springs eternal theme. In any event, the point about inheritance is it's modest. It will affect maybe 40% of the population. It's not going to change their life. We wanted to know, did you know it was coming? And had you talked to your advisor about it? The answer was no. They didn't know it was coming. They didn't yet have plans for it. And they'd made their decision afterwards. American advisors will tell you that the children of their clients have already spent the money. It's not true. They may not have discussed it with their parents' advisor, but that's a whole different flavor and issue. So will inheritance influence people's retirement? Well, for about a third, the yellow and the blue, maybe a little bit. But for the vast majority of Americans, inheritance is not a factor. So let's put that to rest and look at some of the other issues that we looked at. Let's talk about mom and dad. Who's helping mom and dad? Well, what we found is the concept, we call it the alpha child. My guess is if you think of yourself and your siblings, one of you is the alpha child. It's often a daughter who's taking care of the parents in terms of the practical things. Obviously, everyone shares the financial costs. It's everything. It's chores. It's rides to the doctor. It's the bills, the pills, maybe it's moving them home. It's 10 hours a week. This is not minor time. This is probably half a day on a weekend and maybe a couple calls from the office every day to make sure they're okay. It's that type of thing. It's not a lot of money, but what we found is for people who have an elderly parent, it absolutely will lower their spending. And the other answer they gave us in terms of impact, they tell us, I'll just work longer. So we're automatically starting to see that people will take care of their folks first and just assume that they'll push their retirement date back. We asked them, so what have you learned? And what we saw was, well, anyone who's taken in their parents absolutely doesn't want to do this to their own children. They want to make sure that they can live independently, and they also are starting to add advisors and look more carefully at their retirement. This is a kind of a list of all the things that people do for their parents. I'm not going to go through it in detail, but you can see it's a range. It's practical things like finding and getting them to doctors. It's doing the paperwork and expenses. Many of you, I bet, in the room are doing some of that, doing elder care right now. I know certainly I am, and that's it's a common thing. The list goes on. And you can see moving them into your home, doing very practical things, helping them with uninsured or uncovered medical expenses. This is kind of the range of what people are doing for their folks. And so I think it's a really sobering topic. Most people, half of Americans, are doing something for their parents today. So this is not minor. About 50% are doing neither financial or non-financial. Many are doing both. What's the impact? Maybe I won't take a trip because maybe I can't leave the house because maybe they're with me and they need my care. But frankly, working for pay in retirement, you can see, is a very large common theme. And you can see, if you add the red and the green to the right together at the far right, it's close to 40%. Assume that they're going to be working for pay later in their life. You can see the list goes on. The one thing they don't want to do, they don't want the fact that they're helping their parents come out of the hides of their kids. They don't want to provide less to their children because they're helping their parents. So again, they'll absorb, they'll be the sponge, take the difference, and just work longer. That seems to be the answer for conflicted resources. What are the lessons learned? I don't want to burden my kids with my moving in with them, or I want to increase my retirement savings, and I want to pay much more attention to my investments. It's time to get smart. It's time to look maybe at portfolio construction and what I have with my advisor. So those are some of the lessons that we've heard from parents. And now let's talk about the kids. Okay? Looking around today, I think that there are many people in the room who are probably too young to have this issue. Your kids are probably not old enough to have either moved home or never left. In the States, people leave home to go to college, and then they move back around 21 or 22. So we figured 25 was a good age to look at. Here's what we found in the States. Most people are helping somehow. One in three parents are either paying the rent or have actually moved them back home. It's everything. It's advice. It's advice about careers. It's advice about relationships. It's not all monetary, but it's living expenses. If you're helping your kid get a car or a down payment for a flat, it can be a lot of money. A down payment, obviously, is going to be in the tens of thousands of dollars. Miscellaneous costs are much more modest. It's 5 hours a week to help your children as opposed to 10 hours a week to help your parents. Maybe that's because the kids don't hang out on the weekends with you. I'm not quite sure. But it's less time in terms of helping your... And the number one answer we heard in terms of this dynamic, this tendency of people to share, to continue to care for their families later in life, is that they will work for pay in retirement. So if anything, the numbers that we've watched go from 29 to 35 to 40... Maybe that's what we'll hit this year. It is a very, very common thing, and so we think that this is something to watch. They didn't expect to take care of their kids, but they're happy to do it. Here's what they're doing. It's a laundry list, including, by the way, doing their laundry. If you're paying for the car, you're doing everything. It seems like a pretty good deal for the kids. You get all the meals and the laundry, the whole thing. Why would you leave? For many American kids, getting out of college comes with a very high debt level, and that might approximate a rent check. So we understand that this may be a very economically smart decision within the family to have the child pay off their debt before they go out and try to find their own place. So, but it is an absolute growing and fast-growing theme in the U.S. Who's doing it? Well, frankly, 3 out of 4 are helping their children somehow. Either financial, non-financial, or frankly, the most common is both. And so the idea that raising your child ends at 18 or 20 or 25 is absolutely, I don't have to explain that to too many parents in the room, it doesn't end. And it has implications for you as an advisor as you think about the clients with whom you're working. Who is in these situations? What impact will it have? And how do you work with them in a very positive way to talk about the implications for their longer careers and the meaning that they want from that? Here's the impact. The number one answer, I will work for pay in retirement. Okay, so again, that idea that working in retirement, frankly, I always thought retirement meant that you didn't work. That is absolutely not what we're seeing now. What we're seeing is more the idea, as Graham said, that maybe the goal of our clients is not the status of whether you get up and go to work in the morning, but whether or not you feel that it was a choice. that you have financial independence, and that if you go to work, you derive great meaning. We found most Americans that go back to work are working like 32 hours a week. It's not minor. It's four days a week, and they're happy to do it. But this is definitely an issue for them. Americans who are helping their families also are yearning to have their advisor talk to them about the discipline that they think that they may be lacking. How do you spend less time spending, more time thinking about putting money aside? And in a minute, I'm going to show you that you are way ahead of what I see in the States in terms of the discipline and the level of saving that your clients have committed to. Obviously, starting with the super, which is huge. But let me wrap up with a couple lessons from the States now. We are finding that older workers are actually losing retirement confidence. So not only does retirement mean that they does it not mean that they've stopped working, but it also means that the other, if I think of two images of retirement, I think of leisure and I think of peace of mind. And I think both of those are under scrutiny in the U.S. The family role is primary, and what we're finding is most people will tell us that taking care of their family today, be it parents, kids, themselves, whatever it is, takes precedent over putting more money aside for the future. Today wins, generally. Advisors, frankly, are rarely consulted in the States about these issues within the family. Generally, what I find when talking with advisors is the conversation is more about the pie charts, and everyone gets materials. They get literature. They sit and have reviews, but it's usually about the product, about the performance of the product. And I'm not saying that's not critical. It obviously is. But the context of what the client is going through and what pressures they're having is becoming more and more both behaviorally and also I find some of the better advisors in the U.S., you know, they spend a lot more time talking about what is the goal. If the goal is to stay working and focused, which is a very healthy goal, what does that mean? What kind of planning does that mean? Inheritance is only going to affect a handful of people. About a third tops will find it affect their retirement. But generally, we have found advisors keep people on track. They keep them on the long-term issues, but they have yet, in the States at least, to address the family as the issue and the core beginning of where the meaning is, what the goal is of having those assets to begin with. So that's a little on the U.S. What I want to do now is shift to what I learned from you. Last month, I had the ability to take the brilliant database of advisor information, and we wrote a short survey. And I don't know who in the room, and nor do I need to know, but many of you, a little under 200 people, responded. And we asked questions about your practice, about your business, about how you approached the business with your clients. We wanted to know what you thought of savings behaviors. Of your underlying investors, and also what's the focus, and do you think your clients will retire? Will they retire for good? Will they retire on time? Will they have enough? And in a nutshell, you have a much more optimistic view of the world than do what I see of Americans. Now, I will point out that advisors, by their very nature, are working with clients with more money who have taken the interest and the time and the money to retain your services. So we automatically are going to have an upward bias in your perception of who's ready. That aside, I think you're going to see some really strong and, I think, positive themes towards what we learned. So let me take you through that. You're much more confident that your clients are going to retire on time. You're telling us that the savings patterns exhibited by your clients are not only good, but they're improving. And you do think that most people, if they want to stay retired, will do so. I'll show you some data on age and who's retired in your perspective. And I realize not everyone in the room was part of this, but I'll take you through what your colleague said. If people go back to work, it will be out of choice. That's very much like the U.S. In the U.S., people tell us, 70% of people who go back to work in the U.S. say it was their choice. Now, the group that has to go back to work often are women, particularly older women who have been widowed or divorced or were single all their life or who earned less. So there are pockets that this has there are differences in terms of who ends up working out of choice versus necessity. I asked the same question of advisors about do you think your clients forestall large purchases, and I'll show you that data. But also what I'm seeing is you have some of the same trends in terms of taking care of parents and children, but it's much more muted. The kids a little bit more than the parents, just like in the States. So let me take you through some of that. We ask people, how much time are you spending, how much of your practice is spent on retirement? Both funds under management and time, it was more than 50% was spent focused on retirement. We said, has that improved, declined, or stayed the same? For 70% of you, it had increased. Okay? So your focus on retirement has increased in the last 3 to 5 years. We wanted to know what percentage of your clients actually say that they're retired. And it's less than 50% of your clients today are retired. I'm not surprised by that. Many of your clients are on their way to retirement, but if the demographics are similar to the U.S., they're going to still be in their late 40s and early 50s. They won't have achieved that. One of our questions was, well, what percentage of your clients today do you think have returned to work? The vast majority, over 90% of you, told us that it was 1 in 4 or less than 1 in 4. Okay, so it's not zero. I looked at all the breaks under 25. It wasn't zero. It's in that 1 in 4 range. And it absolutely was out of choice. Okay, so you're seeing the trend, but you think it's a choice, and I think we can feel good about that. We also said, one of the questions I had was, what percentage of your clients save a lot more beyond the super? And what you can see is more than 50, almost a little over 60%, I think it's 63% of advisors told us that your clients are saving well beyond the super. And then my question was, well, how much? And the options were, was it an additional 1 to 2%, 3 to 6, I'm sorry, yeah, 3 to 5, 6 to 9, or over 10? The most common answer among the people who responded to our survey was that your clients, in addition to obviously doing the mandatory super, were saving at least another 10%. Not everyone. You can see that there are some people who are more in that 6 to 9 range. But that's an extremely healthy amount of money to be putting aside. And I think if you reflect on your own book of business, if you're in that camp, that's very strong. And that is not the case in the States at all. I also wanted to know, well, how many of your clients actually took that window that ended June 30th? By the way, we knew enough not to interview you before July 1, so we waited and sent the survey out after July, knowing you were very busy. But we wanted to know what percentage of your clients had taken advantage of the time to add more money in. And frankly, most, over 60%, said it was under 1 in 4. So it wasn't everyone. You can see another quarter of you said, no, it was almost half your clients. It wasn't the majority, but it was a fair amount. And again, my question would be, well, how much did they put in? This is a little unfair because you're going to have clients of all different means. But let me just show you the distribution of what your clients said, or what you said your clients put away. The most frequently mentioned amount of money that people added to their super looks to be $50,000. Now, that's a little misleading because if you look all the way to the right, you can see that $500,000 of about 11%. Look at that, and then look at to the right of that. If you add the other folks who've added $250,000 or $1 million or even over $1 million, you can see that a third of the people who added money in added more than $500,000. So there's a full range. You've got people adding 10, 50, but a good percentage of people took this opportunity and really tucked in a fair amount of money for their future. That's obviously, I must admit, I sit in Boston most of the year. I come here at least once or twice a year to share our research. But when I sat and read that opportunity existed, my jaw dropped. The idea that you could have an opportunity to put that kind of money towards your future would not happen in the States. It would be seen as too advantageous of the high net worth, and it would never have been allowed. I think it's terrific that it was able to be done. And you can see people very much put money aside. So the question is, do advisors think your clients are saving enough? Well, it's about half and half. Half say yes, half say no. Okay, so do you think your clients have saved enough? That was kind of evenly split. The other question I wanted to know was, because it's such a confusing topic in the States, when you talk with your clients about the goal that they have or that you have with them for how much they need to put away, is it a dollar or is it a percentage of their salary? And what we heard was for three-quarters of you, you absolutely set a dollar amount, that you'd sit and do the math and you figure out what should be maybe an annual amount that they put aside. I'm sure it's based also on their salary, but, you know, for one quarter, it's a percentage of their savings. So, again, then the question would be, well, how much was that? You're going to see, again, the most common answer was other. Most people have a highly variable amount of money that you would sit with your clients and ask them to put aside. You can see the top answer was $20,000, but you can see $25,000, $50,000, very common. You can see for some people it's going to be $100,000. That's going to be pretty modest, but it's a full range. For those of you who actually express the goal with your clients as a percentage of income, it's 20% is the most common answer. In other words, start with the super and add at least 10% more. I have to tell you, if that existed in the States, we would probably not be seeing as many people going back to work out of necessity. People really are not able. We start with nothing mandatory. The average American only puts 6 or 7% aside, so we start out much lower. And 1 in 4 Americans don't even participate. They don't save at all. And so we've got a real range of preparedness in the States. Here, if you are working with your clients and saying 20% and you're finding success there, I think that's just terrific. That said, one of the questions was, well, do you think your clients are going to meet their goal? And 75% of you said, yes, you do. That contrast, remember, that I just showed you a few minutes ago, that only 40 or 50% of American advisors think their clients are going to meet their goal. A couple of other comments. When do your clients want to retire? That's in the blue on the left. Well, some in their 50s, most in their 60s. And then on the right, well, on average, when do you expect your clients to retire? The vast majority of you think it will still happen in your clients' 60s. You'll see a little bit of a creep. You'll see some of them pushing it into the 70s. But for most people, you believe that when they want to retire is when they will retire. Now, again, we could debate. Does retirement mean not working? In fact, when we asked that, we said, again, do you expect what percent will continue to work part-time in retirement? And once again, you can see most of you said 1 in 4, but a third of you said it could go as high as 1 in 3, even higher. All of you said you thought it would be a choice. And I think that's really what our goal should be. When our clients achieve an age and a position where you've worked with them for their career, as long as they want to keep working and it's a choice, to me, that's the perfect outcome. You're working for meaning. You're not working for money. You're working for purpose. You're working for focus, for being sharp, for being connected, for all the socially and healthy good reasons. I think that's really strong. As far as parents and kids, I threw that in just to see if there were any analogies. About only 1 in 4 are having their elderly parents live with them. I would point out that with your health care coverage, you're not going to have the same pressures that we do to take our folks in and to really provide for them. As far as the kids, I think we're starting to see some of these trends go on here. You can see that most advisors think that it's less than 1 in 4 are helping their children over 25. But look, you have at least 20% who think it's higher than that, who think it's in the range of where the U.S. is moving. So I would argue that the trend that we're seeing of it being the grown children more than the parent becoming either, we could debate whether this is a good thing, a social thing, a financial issue, all the reasons why your grown children might live with you, it is definitely starting to happen here as well. We asked people, do you think your clients postpone large purchases? The same question I showed you for the States. I didn't ask what they didn't buy. But 3 out of 4 said, you know, you do think that it's not a huge percentage of your clients, but you also see that about 20% say, no, it could be as many as half of my clients postpone purchases to save money for the future. And I think the important issue is on the right. Over the last few years, do you believe that your behaviors and the savings behaviors of your clients have improved, declined, or stayed the same? And vast majority, almost 90%, say your client's behavior is improving, that they get the message, that they take this seriously, and that they're working with you. So with that, the last question we asked was, what if you had an extra hour with your clients? What would be the most significant items that you would want to spend time with your clients talking about? And I just want to share with you, I'm not going to go into any detail. If you're interested in the verbatim comments, we can share them with Graham and get them to you. But basically, it was more around estate planning, wealth transfer, but still some budgeting and saving. You can see portfolio construction and how do investments work and how do you get your clients to pay attention to that is important, as well as lifestyle issues, aged care, how to address those. So these themes, I think, are universal. So with that, you've very patiently sat through a lot of data about both markets. The Australian advisors we interviewed expect more traditional retirement in the sense that I think you're going to have fewer people maybe working longer, but they will choose to work if they want to, and that is absolutely good. It's 1 in 4 versus 1 in 3 right now. The U.S. number is jumping up so quickly that I think the U.S. number could get to 40-45% in the next couple years. It's the only answer for a lot of Americans. If you think of having a shortfall, there's really only 3 things you can do. You can invest more, you can take more risk, or you can work longer. Most Americans pick that last button and say, I'll work longer. Savings rates obviously stronger here. You're more likely to think your clients are going to make their goals. We don't have anything mandatory. Most Americans do not have an advisor, so we are much farther behind than your clients are. And you also have, I would say, reasonable costs of both uni and national health care. And so those 2 pressure points on both the aged and the grown children are not as present as we see. And then while I do think the word retirement may sound drastic, I think what we're really talking about is redefining what retirement means. It might not have anything to do with the status of your work career. It might have everything to do with your peace of mind and your ability to feel financially independent. So with that, let me stop, and I'll make room for our next speaker, and I'll take questions afterwards. Thank you very much.